What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of the number one sports podcast in the Southeast. It's teaming up with CNV. I'm your host, Connor, the C himself, with my co-host, as always, the V. On the other side of the Zoom screen, Vladimir, what's going on, man? Welcome back to another spring episode.
I'm doing amazing. I watched one of the most entertaining, if not the best, two-leg semifinal tie of a UCL thing that I can remember with Inter and Barcelona. It was the best hate watch of my life. I'm not really used to hate watching. Usually it's my team that is getting hate watched by other fans. But Inter Milan was able to knock out the evil Catalan separatist Barcelona from 7-6 on aggregate after going to extra time with both legs finishing 6-6. You had crazy moments, incredible individual brilliance. You had some moments of just like head scratching. What are you doing? I remember I was talking with friends and I'm like, I don't understand this Inter team. They look awful. All of them run that like they're in their third trimester. There's no ability to sprint. For a team that's supposedly defensive geniuses, they'd only conceded 5 goals up until the semifinals. Barca comes in and puts six past them in 2 games. And yes, Barca are very good attacking wise, but when I watched Inter defend, there wasn't actually any defending. They don't mark anybody, they don't track runners. The shape is whatever. They just let people come at them. It was ridiculous, but it was so much fun to watch. Barca lost. The second leg was in Italy, so the fans went crazy. Rain came down. You had people running around, slipping, sliding. It was beautiful. We sit Inter Milan for the second time. And I guess I'd say in 15 years, but for the second time, have saved Real Madrid specifically back in 2010. They beat a Barcelona team that was trying to win a UCL in our home in Madrid, because that was going to be the host. And so we owe them a lot of thanks. Other than that, though, I'm doing well. Another week of work. I'm being asked to work some overtime. Not happy about it, but you do what you have to do. And so, yeah, that's it. How are you?
I'm good. I love that you got to hate watch something. What round did you say that was
That was
again?
the semifinals.
Okay, so that was a big round. And who are they going to play in the final?
Either PSG or Arsenal, they play tomorrow. We hope it's PSG because if Inter play Arsenal, you could sleep for 10 hours and there wouldn't be a goal. Those two teams, they would just sit back and be pragmatic and do nothing to each other. It'd be awful. So we need PSG to finish the job.
Fun. Second question. You get paid for overtime?
No.
Okay. I figured
So
that was no,
yeah,
but
it's a bit of a pickle, and I don't want to get into it here, but we used to
yeah.
get paid, and then General Dynamics likes copying everything from the automotive industry, but not the good things, only the bad ones. So like I don't get 15% bonuses the way my friends at GM do, but I also don't or and then we used to have paid overtime the way they wouldn't. They're like, oh, you know what? You're going to lose paid overtime, and we're not giving you 15% bonuses. So there's my quick rant
Wait.
about work. But yeah.
Toyota has paid overtime. That's the only reason why I asked.
We used to up until 2 years ago.
I'm going to play devil's advocate is I think if you're a salaried employee, you're going to hate this. You don't deserve paid overtime. Like that's part nature of the beast. You get paid for the work, not the hours it takes for the work. That's just my profession
Can I
that
counter?
requires, yes.
For us specifically, we actually charge by the hour to government contracts. So, like, I am salaried, but all of my hours are billed to certain things. So, can I make the counter that I should be getting extra?
Yeah, maybe I come from the back. I just the in an industry where it's impossible to work 40 hours a week,
Yeah.
and we also have billable get judged by how many billable hours you work, which is not the same as how many hours you work, unfortunately. It'd be really nice if it was, but I definitely come in with a negative bias towards it. But I admit my bias, but. To get into the episode today, we're just going to do a playoff recap for the NBA and NHL. Not too much going on outside that, what Vladdy mentioned with the soccer going on in the sports world right now. I guess off the hop mention, Tigers, the number one team in the AL. We'll get to a Tigers preview probably in like July when there's nothing else to talk about, but they're rolling. They're going to play the worst team in baseball, maybe ever. this week in the Colorado Rockies. So keep an eye out for those Tigers. Some interesting storylines there. Javi Baez is batting damn near 300, still a month and a half into the season. Torkelson is a top is top 10 in home runs, even though he's kind of cooled off from his hot start. And Riley Green, who went on that massive slump, has seemed to figure it out. So they're fun to watch. Skuball's dealing every night. This pitching staff's been amazing this year in general. That's our quick Tigers recap, I guess, for the next probably month. And if you wanted to know, in baseball, Aaron Judge is hitting 430 8 weeks into the season, which is just unbelievable. There's nobody batting within 100 points of him right now. That's my baseball recap for today.
There you go.
But NBA, NHL both kind of wrapped up series or round ones. And then we started to get round twos into Sunday and Monday. And then tonight, as we're recording on Tuesday, so we'll get into that. Do you want me to go first or do you want to go
I'll
first?
go. I think you started last time.
Okay.
We'll start with the Pistons and the Knicks, the one that
Yep.
stings.
The one that got away.
We have to talk about that very sad game six. In both halves, the Pistons dug themselves big holes in the first and third quarter, and then spent the second and fourth quarter clawing back from that, getting into winning positions and getting into positions where they should have controlled the game. I mean, I'll give the Pistons some credit for not folding and fighting back from those positions, but I'm actually incredibly disappointed in them. I know they're a young team. I know that they're playing the Knicks, and oh, the Knicks beat Boston, but at some point, you are professional athletes. There needs to be some shame. Cade Cunningham was disgraceful in those fourth quarters all series. He took a great step in the regular season, but in the playoffs, you saw what a star needs to do, and that was Jalen Brunson. You know, we can talk all about the foul baiting, and yes, I hate him the way he plays. I think it's an awful look on basketball. But every single time the New York Knicks walk down the floor in the fourth quarter of any of six of those games, the possession started and ended with Jalen Brunson with the ball, taking a shot or making a pass. Meanwhile, Cade Cunningham was Mr. Pass First, Mr. Deferring to everyone else, Mr. Hide in the corner. There were possessions where he didn't even touch the ball, which that is inexcusable if you're a team that wants to go anywhere. You cannot have your star player hide in the fourth quarter. You're never going to do anything that way. That is not the way to win. And in the nicest possible way, they got what they deserved. I think I touched on it last week. You lose all of the turnover battles. Malik Beasley kind of plays against you for the first portion of that series. He started to pick it up, I think, in games five and six specifically, but there were still questions there. Amen Thompson needs, I want to say Amen. Ausar Thompson needs to get better on the offensive end so that he can actually get himself to be on the court. That was another thing that I was not overly happy with JB Bickerstaff, where in game six, we've got a lead. Ausar Thompson goes to the bench because the thought process is probably, oh, well, he's an offensive deficiency, so we don't want that to happen. We don't want them to play hack an Ausar or have to go 4-on-5 or maybe 3-on-5, depending on if Jalen Duren's on the court or not. The problem is when you do that, Jalen Brunson gets loose, he starts getting into it, starts getting a feel for things, and then you see that dagger three where Ausar Thompson kind of does the cha-cha slide off the screen. Again, it's not indictments. They were a young team, first postseason experience for pretty much all of those players, except for the guys who may or may not even be here next season. So it is what it is. You learn, or you hope that you learn, and we'll see what happens next year. It was frustrating because that was absolutely a winnable series, even when you take away the foul baiting, some of the poor individual ref choices with the Tim Hardaway three in game four specifically and whatnot. So yeah, frustrating, but is what it is. You can put your head up high and say we had a good bounce back season. You want to sit there and take some more fire. You can say that Trajan Langdon was robbed of GM of the year and JB Bickerstaff was robbed of coach of the year and Cade was robbed of most improved player or whatever it might be. So hopefully those guys, if they need to, use that as fuel for next season. But that's the end of the Piston season. So
I think that's a very fair take from you in general. Just
thanks.
very reasonable. Because I've
Are
seen a
you
lot
saying
of
that's
like kind
rare
of.
for me that usually I go on
Yeah, that's what
different.
I mean. It's like I've seen everything I've seen is either complete frustration about how this team like choked and how there's like all these holes and yada, yada, yada. Or it's completely on the side of Well, they shouldn't have never been there. Like, this is a good, completely a good experience. And I think it's allowed, your take of it's kind of allowed to be both as a reasonable offering. I
To the next
appreciate that
series
out
that
of you.
ended, and I forget how many of these games were played between the last time we talked. It was kind of funny with me going to the movies the last couple Tuesdays. I forgot that this was our typical night, and so Warriors Rockets. This has probably surpassed the LeBronto late 2010s levels of ownership regarding Steph Curry and these Houston Rockets. Five straight playoff series victories over them. I think that's five of the last seven times the Rockets have been in the playoffs. It's been the Warriors who've knocked them out. I want to say when we spoke, it was right before game five, the last time we talked, and the Rockets jumped out early there. The Warriors kind of got a little cocky, pulled their starters, and said, "Oh, you know, we'll take care of business in game six. Don't worry about it." And they just conceded game five very early on. And then the Rockets showed up in game six, ran that two big lineup that was giving them fits. And they took game six, and you say, well, crap, now we have to go back to Houston. You got Steph Curry's kid crying in the stands, and Steph's like, "Oh, don't worry, buddy. You know, Dad still got a game on Sunday. Don't worry about it." Steve
Got a
Kerr has
million kids, by the way.
what?
Got like a million kids, by the way. I don't. Sorry, that was, I got you
It's
off your
fine.
game there.
No, you're fine, but yeah, I mean, the two big lineup. I highlight that because that was massive for the Rockets to kind of get them back into the series and get them into a position where they thought, oh, we're back home in game seven. We're the younger team, the more athletic team, the better team. And then Steve Kerr goes to his little bag of tricks, brings Kevon Looney in. Jonathan Kuminga gets some minutes. The Warriors get a little bigger. They get a little bit more athletic. And this is mostly on the defensive end because Kevon Looney on the offensive end is a nothing burger, and Kuminga without actually ex having extended run on the court is not going to be a nothing any sort of contributor, just because you need those reps, you need the consistency, the confidence, and he just didn't have that. But what he did provide them was somebody who could jump into the air, fight Steven Adams, fight Alperen Sengun for a rebound, somebody who could defend a little bit, maybe beat his guy off the dribble and throw a kick out. And then you got to game seven, and you kind of had a lot of the cliches come true. Draymond Green, I think this is one thing that goes very underrated for him. On top of being what might be one of the best defenders of all time, and probably certainly the best of our generation, is he is incredible in game sevens. If you look at some of those stats, the advanced stats, even the shooting, it's some kind. I think he shoots like 40 to 45% from deep in game sevens in his career, which is nothing you've ever associated with him
Yeah.
ever. He
Didn't he
was.
only have like 6 points too?
No,
Oh,
he
was
was
that
in
game
the,
six?
yeah, probably. He was in the high double just because he had 6 points right off the bat because he ripped two threes, I want to say, in like the first quarter. But you had him do what he does best. He was locking down Sengun. He was locking down everyone. Buddy Hield was a human torch
Yeah.
in the first half. I think he was 7 of 9 from deep just in the first half. Ended up, I think, with
16.
30. I wouldn't be shocked if all 30 of those were three-pointers with the way that kind of that went. And then
9 for 11 from three.
And then Steph Curry kind of did what Steph Curry does. He was very slow to start the game. Honestly, don't even know if he scored in the first half, or if he did, it was late in the second quarter. But in the moments where you need to protect a lead that you have, in the moments where you need to stay ahead, and we're going to talk about teams that didn't do that in game one of the semifinal series, you need Steph Curry. He comes in, he does what he does. He looked like the most energetic person on the court at 37 years old or 36 years old, whatever he is. It was incredible. The Warriors win, send the Houston Arena home with 2 minutes to go, and you've got Draymond Green staring into the camera with his gray beard, and you got Buddy Hield chirping at people, and
He is gray now. He's very gray now.
Steph's hitting the sleep celebration. So that was awesome. If you're a Rockets fan, you must be sick. 10 years ago, you saw Steph Curry kind of destroy you. Then KD was there and destroyed your James Harden Rockets. And then you went through a rebuild and you said, oh, we're the two seed. We're back. We're young. We're this. We're that. And then, boom, Steph Curry hits you over the head with a shovel again. So they must hate his guts. And I think the Rockets, they'll probably be aggressive. I think they're kind of realizing that defense is great and energy is great, but come key possessions, crucial winning moments, you need a go-to guy, and it's not Amen Thompson yet. Jalen Green was awful. Alperen Sengun, okay, he's a nice piece, but they don't have a guy, And so you'll probably see them in the Kevin Durant, in the Giannis sweepstakes, and we'll see if they make a move this offseason. But that was the second series that ended. The third one that ended that while we hadn't spoken was the Nuggets and Clippers. Great back and forth, makes its way to a game seven, and this is once again where all the cliches come true. James Harden game seven has now lost four different game sevens with four different teams. Another year, another Clippers disappointment. Nikola Jokic is the best player in basketball. Stop me if you've heard that one before. I guess really the couple shout outs I have are Aaron Gordon. I think we talked about his little buzzer beating dunk in game five. I want to say that was before that happened before we spoke, but if it wasn't, just a very quick recap. It was the closest thing I've ever seen where they're going frame by frame on the camera angle overhead, trying to see when the LED light comes on and where the basketball is in relation to Aaron Gordon's hands. That dunk counted. He had another one in the semifinal series against the Thunder last night. I'll talk about that when we get there. But the last shout out I have is actually Steve Ballmer for flying out members of the wall, which is like the supposed to be the super fans for the Clippers. And he paid for tickets, he paid for flights, he paid for hotels, and he brought some of his fans into that arena so they could have a presence. And I thought that's a really cool move from an owner who in the
Yeah.
past has gotten a lot of slack and a lot of, oh, look, he's a lunatic because he claps at the presser and he's very excited for his team. Now that's just an example of somebody who cares. It's just unfortunate that the team he owns is the Los Angeles Clippers and they're cursed.
They are cursed.
Knicks Celtics. I thought this was kind of pathetic from Boston in game one of the Eastern Conference semis. You blow a 20-point lead in the third quarter at home to this Knicks team. You're shooting 63s, and I know that's your identity, but you don't have 82 games to let your kind of analytics and your money ball averages show up. You need to take the matchups you get. And what I emphasize by that is I watched a 6'8" Jason Tatum get forced into step back threes with Jalen Brunson guarding him. Jalen Brunson is 6 feet tall on a good day, 5'9" on a bad. And you're letting that guy body you, and you're settling for step back threes. Pathetic from Jason Tatum, pathetic from that Celtics. And I don't think it changes much in the series. I need to see the Knicks win a second game before I can really say, oh yeah, I think these guys have a chance, just because again, I don't think the Knicks are very good. I watched the Pistons could and maybe should beat them, and I think just the Celtics are too good. But for that game one that we watched, pathetic from them.
You think that's a rust versus rest thing, or
No, I
just
mean it could be. I think it's more of just they got caught with their little ugly play style of, oh, everybody jacks up threes. I want to say they set a, I don't know if it was a NBA or a franchise record for most amount of 3-point attempts. It's just you got to do what the rest of the teams do, and that's you got to go back to the mid-range because that is more efficient, obviously. And it's, take the points that you can get. Don't just jack up threes because that's what you used to do. So I just didn't like the approach, but you know, if it didn't work there, maybe the analytics will say it'll work next time and it'll all average out. But I still think they're better than the Knicks. I don't see any way the Knicks end up in the Eastern Conference Finals, but I guess we've seen crazier things happen. In the other matchup in the Eastern Conference Final semis, you have the Pacers and the Cavs. A Darius Garland-less Cavs team goes out, loses game one of the series to the high-flying Pacers. For game two, they've already announced that he's not going to play. Evan Mobley's not going to play. There's another guy who's not going to be playing. So the
And they're
Cavs
up 12 in the first quarter right now.
Cavs are in a little bit of a pickle. If those guys are actually hurt and missing extended time, I do still think they're better than the Pacers. But if you lose both of these at home and the Pacers just have to nick two of five wins remaining, I start to worry about the Cavs. But we'll burn that bridge when we cross it, I guess. I don't think there's many parallels to draw from this, just because again, it's without Darius Garland, one of your best players, and now you've got other guys who are hurt. To the last series that started, we'll have Warriors Timberwolves tonight. But Thunder Nuggets, once again, Nikola Jokic is the best player in the world, and it's not particularly close. I'm sure the people who voted for SGA to be the MVP are probably feeling a little sick after watching that. You walk into OKC, you drop 41 points, I think it was 22 boards, 6 or 7 assists, and You get, yeah, you have another Aaron Gordon buzzer beater for the win, but it's just walking into a situation where we'll see how far Jokic can carry these guys. Because again, are they a better team than the Thunder? No, but they have the better, they have the best player on the floor. They have a guy who I didn't think I'd ever see this, but have you seen the videos of Jokic kind of coaching his team during huddles where he's like, guys, we got to do this? And I've never seen him care so much in my life about basketball. It's genuinely incredible. But he sits there and you've got videos. He's standing up, everyone's looking at him. I don't know if he's drawing up plays or just telling people how to play, but it's incredible to watch, and we'll see how far Jokic can carry this Nuggets team.
Because they got no coach.
They do not have, or they, I, yeah, they,
A stand-in
it's
coach.
interesting. Yeah,
Coaching
it's
title.
very interesting. But yeah, it's kind of the wind up in the pitch from the
The
from
wind
basketball.
up
I
in
guess
the
if I have
pitch.
to really quickly give a preview on Warriors Timberwolves, I think the Warriors match up a little better with the Timberwolves than they did with the Rockets, and the Warriors are still playing. But with that said, Anthony Edwards is a lunatic. He's got this kind of vendetta, this hit
Dog.
list, if you will, of NBA legends. He's gone through LeBron. He's gone through KD. Steph's next up there. We'll see what the madman can do. I'm very curious to watch this series. The fan in me will say Warriors in six, but I'm not going to sit here and give you actual basketball information on why I believe that. So
Yeah.
there's the wind up in the pitch.
There's the windup in the pitch, and he's swinging a min. Over to the NHL. I guess what you could call the last week in the NHL is why they are the best playoff in sports. One of the greatest finishes to a couple of rounds that I think we've ever seen in a first round in the NHL. I'll kind of start with the not as exciting stuff that happened. In the East, Toronto, after kind of getting up to a 3-0 lead, losing two games, they kind of have their way in game six after, maybe some choke artist articles were starting to be written, and they fend those off and move on to the second round where they play Florida, who ended up waxing Tampa in five. I said that was kind of an interesting series in that they were suspending guys who would come back and then injure the other guy who got suspended, who would come back and injure the other guy who got suspended. Didn't matter. Florida, that's their game. They're going to win those types of series easily. What else happened? Capitals and the Montreal Canadiens. Nothing really happened there. Caps in five. Same with the Hurricanes. That had already happened. To the West, Vegas, after I kind of said they looked like a bit of frauds against Minnesota, they ended up coming back from down 2-1, winning the last three in a row and winning that series. A couple of really interesting overtime games in that series, though. They'll play Edmonton, the McDavid-Draisaitl two-headed beast, after going down 2-0 to LA, wins two games by scoring over five goals. And wins the next four and six games. One of the worst coaching jobs that you'll ever see by the Kings. Just some absolute bonehead breakdowns in games five and six. Lost them that series. But it's one of those things, and I guess I'll quickly preview that series right now, is I think Vegas is kind of the more put together unit, and Edmonton is definitely not the same team they were last year. But Edmonton has that. McDavid's going to get one eventually. He's an all-time great. They all do it. And whether it's this year, next year, or 4 years from now when he's 33, he's going to get one eventually. And they have a shot in any type of series like that. So I'm not like, until he wins one, I'm not counting his team out in any series he plays in. And then the other series on the West is going to be the Winnipeg Jets and the Dallas Stars. And that was the greatest 2 days of hockey I think you'll ever see. We'll start with Saturday night. Avs Stars. I said whoever won that series is going to come out of the West and play for a Stanley Cup. I still stand by that. I think Dallas is still my pick. Dallas down 2-0 in the third period, scores four goals, two of them in the last 3 minutes to win 4-2. The storyline in this one, I've talked about it on the podcast, Mikko Rantanen, a guy that in January was playing for the Avalanche. They couldn't find a contract agreement. He was going to be a UFA this summer. He gets traded to Carolina for Martin Natchez and A Bag of Pucks. Martin Natchez is very good. So aside from Martin Natchez, A Bag of Pucks, he plays about 2 weeks in Carolina, doesn't like it, gets traded to division rival who they kind of knew they were going to be playing in the playoffs in the Dallas Stars. He goes for a hat trick and an assist in the last period to beat his old team in game seven. Cinematic. You can't write a better movie about it. Three goals in the final period. They move on. They'll play Winnipeg, who played an even better game seven Sunday night. Double overtime. Winnipeg down 3-2. Sorry, 3-1 with 2 minutes to go. They pull their goalie. They score. What do? 3-2. They pull the goalie again. And what happens with 1.7 seconds left in a game seven? They score and go to overtime. Their fans would have to wait probably another hour and a half because it took damn near two full overtimes. And this game at about midnight Eastern Standard Time, 11:45 if you're in Winnipeg, we're not, for this one to be over before they get it. Winnipeg moves on. They beat the St. Louis Blues. They kind of get the monkey off their back. They've been a high seed the last couple of years, haven't been able to get out of the first round. Connor Hellebuck gets pulled in game six. Will they go back to him? The guy they want to call the MVP, let alone the best goalie this year, can't get out of the first round. He plays terrible. He lets in a soft goal in game seven. What does he do? He stands on his head for the next four periods, gets the monkey off his back. Hopefully that is enough to kind of get him rolling into what he is the best goaltender in hockey when he's hot and Team USA's guy for this Olympics. They'll be up against the Stars, who just beat what I had as my Stanley Cup champion without their best forward and best defenseman, and Jason Robertson and Miro Heiskanen. They're both supposed to be back at some point in this series. I just think I'm sticking with my take of whoever won that series is coming out of the West. So give me the Stars in that one. That'll start, I think, tomorrow. Yeah. And then Oilers, I already did that. To the second round, Capitals, Hurricanes, it's going on right now, game one. They're kind of the same team, in my opinion. Not a lot of firepower, per se, in terms of superstars. Ovechkin, obviously, big superstar, but at 40. Isn't quite the McDavids or the Austin Matthews that are some of these other teams have at this point. It's just a matter of, I think Washington, I didn't give them credit. I won't give them any credit because my friend Josh Mitchell likes them for no good reason at all. So I'm going to pick them against them. That is in every single series they plan. It's nothing, nothing in the first period right now. Give me the Canes. Finally, Toronto and the Florida Panthers. I think a lot of people in their minds have that this kind of rat pack of Florida Panthers that play this grimy, in your face, try to get you to do stupid stuff game is going to have their way with a core four in Tavares and Matthews and Marner and Nylander that haven't exactly been known for being tough in their 10 years in Toronto. But that's not giving Toronto credit for what they've done around the core four, is they've built four lines around them. They have a very big and strong defensive core now, which is something they haven't had in past years. And you saw that in game one. The Toronto goes up 2-0 in the first period, 4-1 in the game. They do almost blow it again, like they're very good at. It ended up being 4-3. But I actually think this is going to go seven. It's how tough are the core four willing to play late in this series is what's going to decide it. We know the Florida superstars, Matthew Tkachuk, Sam Bennett, Brad Marchand, who they added at the deadline, are going to be willing to play this game. Will Austin Matthews, will Mitch Marner, will Willie Nylander want to play this game in game six and seven? That'll be the difference in this series, but a good start for the Leafs in game one for sure. And that is the NHL playoffs to date.
Yeah, I guess couple quick notes. The Winnipeg game was crazy. That was something we were flipping on and off with the Warriors Rockets game seven on Sunday night. So we actually were still awake with my dad when that game ended in that late hour. A lot of fun, like you said, the 1.7, 1.8 seconds, whatever the exact number was for the equalizer in regulation. Seeing the videos of some of those kind of reactions was hilarious. I saw one of a Blues fan who's obviously sitting there jumping up and down, thinking he's done it, collapses to the floor. There's the videos of all kind of the little fan fest that you have outside the stadium. The best one that I
Right.
saw though was the one with the guys in the hot in the beer league. Did you see that?
No.
It's a video of guys in beer league somewhere in Winnipeg, and you've just got some kind of camera of the whatever facility they're playing at, looking down at the bench. There are about five guys on the bench, each with a phone on. They score. You see the ref come over. You see players on both sides. They're like, oh, so they were mid of their in the middle of their own game, playing their beer league. They tie it up, and that it was crazy. So a lot of fun. Yeah, I don't know. It was awesome.
There's not much to root for in the city of Winnipeg when you live in a place that's, quite frankly, not really near a lot of stuff. I'm sure it's a great city. I've heard like the actual city part is very fine. Maybe I'm giving it a bad rap, but that's what they have up there. It is fun to see Canadian markets like that do well. I think I've mentioned I mean, we've been doing this for almost 4 years now, 3 years now. And I think early on, I was like the biggest Leafs hater, and I used to talk about how much I hated the Leafs. I've come around on this group. I really have found myself rooting for them a lot. Auston Matthews is one of my favorite players to root for. That's a hot take, especially with people we know that know hockey. They really don't like that I say that. But I want to see a Canadian team do it. I think Toronto has the best chance of getting to the cup, but I think Edmonton has the best chance of winning it if they do. Again, just purely that destiny factor that they have is McDavid is gonna win one eventually, and until he does, they have a chance in every series.
I guess last question, hockey related, just because I was listening to this. And what are your thoughts on the NHL lottery? Is there somebody worth a damn this year, or is it just gonna be a bunch of guys who don't show up for a couple of years?
Yeah, so the Islanders end up getting the first pick. Utah moved up to four was the other big news. And the Red Wings slid down, I think, 2 spots to 13 or 3 spots to 13, which is just typical at this point. It's like, I won't be as dramatic as saying it's like the Pistons being the worst team in basketball, like the history of the league and moving to the fifth pick overall. But they've done really nothing but slide in this draft. You give it to another big market team like the Islanders. In terms of prospects, there's this Michael Misa kid that I think a lot of people will have going number one. There's like a group of four. It kind of reminds me of 2 years ago with Bedard's group, even though Bedard was a generational talent, but there was like four names after that where you're like, wow, all of these guys could go number two. That's kind of how number one is. There's four really good guys that I think would be good as a one or two pick, but there's four of them this year. And it's probably either going to be that Misa kid in the OHL, and there's a defenseman. He played for Team Canada in the World Juniors. I'm blanking on where he plays. He's Schaefer is the last name. He's a defenseman if
I
the
think
team.
that's the name I've heard where it's. I think I saw some stat where he was like, after McDavid, he was the only person to ever get taken first in both the OHL and the NHL draft, or some stat like
Yeah,
that.
it's
Or could become the first
the
to do that.
big fight will be next year. There's a kid, he plays in Medicine Hat in the Western League called Gavin McKenna, and he's probably a bigger prospect than Bedard even was 2 years ago. So
All right. So you're saying or I say the Tigers, the Red Wings need to tank a season then so they can get a good prospect. Are you done with tanking and missing
we gotta
playoffs?
worry about like the locker room right now with the GM and the captain just kind of going back at each other in the media. But I don't know how much you've seen that of
I
that.
saw a little bit of it a couple weeks ago where it was like we wanted some help at the deadline and he didn't help, obviously.
Larkin or Yzerman did his press conference, I think last week, and basically was like, I've talked to Dylan individually, I won't talk about it, which is just. And we all know where I stand with the Yzerman thing, but and he's notoriously keeps it close to the vest, but it's annoying at this point until he starts to win things that like you're beginning to lose that privilege. But that's for another show, another podcast.
All right. I mean, I don't have anything else. I know this is going to be one of the shortest episodes we've done in maybe a year, if not more, just because there's no football, there's no miscellaneous. I know next week we'll have the PGA Championship. We quickly talked about it before we started. Don't need to get into it, but unless you're thinking of something else, got anything?
Any tennis news? I don't know.
No, I mean tennis. I think I brought up the Jannik Sinner. Kind of suspension or pseudo suspension where they just gave him an unpaid vacation. There hasn't been a major in 2 months. The French Open starts, I think, May 25th. So that's the earliest we can really bring something up. But it is, like you said, it's kind of a very dead period of sports where you've got the beginnings of playoff series for two sports. You have no football, which is obviously the biggest driving factor, and baseball's at the beginning stages of a season that is so long that nobody can bother to care what happens in May.
Yeah, well, I won't say it's as dead as like July or like even late June, but like
Sure. Yeah.
the farther you get along in the both the NBA NHL playoff cycle is just the deader it gets because there's just less games night to
That's
night.
when we get creative, but
Yeah.
we'll have our time to figure that part out. Before we go too far into rambling stage, I will leave everyone with a go Pistons. Hopefully they can build on this good stepping stone of a season. You?
Let's go Maple Leafs. It's our year, baby.